The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Top of the morning to you. Welcome to it. The weekend edition is here. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt momentarily. Mark Kranak. Lot to get to. We'll talk some Nebraska football in reference to some of the offensive and identity and hybrid players. Does that sound boring? No. It's what wins football games. We'll get into Nebraska baseball hot and heavy today because it's win or go home. Really, really tough outing for Nebraska baseball against Yale. And we'll run down two of our favorites, Gary Sharp, next hour. Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Our rewind segment will be with Spencer Long, part of the Washington Redskins offensive line. Spend time. Did we just hang up on Kranak? We have this whole huddle planned out, always. Now it sounds like he's... Kranak, are you you spilling coffee again on the computer? How are you? This is wonderful. Okay. So anywho, that's what we're doing. Numbers to dial up, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Court, can tap house, and do so on Twitter at Mark Skurs, at Schmidt underscore radio, or at TJ underscore Henning. TJ looks worried. Okay.
Why?
Oh, you're back. TJ,
don't worry, man.
We're good. Now, Kranak, we're going to go all baseball here to start out. And Darren Erstad last night, you may or may not be able to hear this, but it's the out-competed comment. And the video to go with this audio is telling.
You know, I can't remember last time that we were out-competed. And it stings me to say that we got out-competed today because that's what we do.
Okay, it stings to say that we got out. Let's hear it one more time so I don't just boaster it. It's 7:09, and I can't repeat what I just heard. One more from Erstad.
I can't remember the last time that we were out-competed. And it stings me to say that we got out-competed today because that's what we do.
All right, let's translate beyond the obvious. When your coach says you got out-competed, that doesn't sit well in your locker room, in your dugout, whatever it may be. And Kranak, you go through and run into Nebraska baseball fans, and the expectation is to be in a regional. And then the other expectation is to, like, if you're going to lose, I don't know where this comes from, but if you're going to lose to the Stanfords or Oregon States or some of the premier baseball programs, Yale is not acceptable. To Yale's credit, they are a really good baseball team. They got a phenomenal pitcher and Scott Politz.
Obviously,
yeah. Nebraska had no answer yesterday. But when you hear get out-competed, is that something that you can live with for a while if you're a competitor? It shouldn't be. I mean, Erstad's tone and anger, really, I mean, he wore it, and that's how he is. He was almost, I mean, it looked distraught. The definition of what distraught is on his face is what I saw based on how his guys didn't perform. And it comes back to offense. And the offense is so, so, so stressed against competent to good pitching, and that's how it's kind of been this year.
It's concerning that he would drop that sort of descriptor on his team essentially when you have a game left.
Yeah,
you're at the point, we talked about that some, I think 2 weeks ago, where you get to this point of the season where hey, losses, they matter. Like, you, mm-hmm. you basically can't lose anymore. And now that's really true. This is it, right? You literally cannot lose another game or the season's over. And to drop that level of criticism on his team with a game left, I got to think, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I have to think he thinks that will strike a chord with his team.
Okay.
More than it was an actual observation or criticism. I have a hard time believing that the team went out there and you know, like, what goes into the word compete? What goes into that? How do you demonstrate that? Were they just swinging softly? Were they not trying hard?
Did they not care? No, they cared. They tried hard, but here's his take on this, and this has been the narrative all week. The narrative is that you better go out there and respect Yale. You're Nebraska. You're thinking Oregon State. You're ready to move on to the bigger. And I think he was worried about that all week. He's worried about Yale all week. And Nebraska not overlooking Yale. You're the Big Ten regular season champ. You've heard and been slapped on the back for your accomplishment because it's been forever since you've won a conference championship. To your credit, you found ways to win in a pretty good league this year. And then you get that draw on Monday. You're first up. It's Oregon State and it's Nebraska. He was worried about it all week. And with some of the guys on this team, they were more excited about what could be versus handling your business in the moment. I think that's where this comment comes from, because he can't guard against it. You can say it and say it and say it, but you got to go actually do it when it comes to complacency. And you've got seniors on this team, upperclassmen, that have been to three regionals, okay, three in their 4 years. So they have not tasted winning yet. And they haven't tasted winning on the road at all. So this is something that he was worried about. He knows the game. He knows young kids. He knows how people act. And it bit them. I think that's what his frustration, obviously the loss is the frustration, but they didn't give proper focus to their current opponent, and they got worked. They got beat up. They got dominated.
Could be, yeah. Pitching is always the equalizer in baseball, you know.
Sure.
I don't know enough about Pulitz. It's not like, I mean, name the person in Nebraska that's been following Pulitz's performance all year.
We'll talk to Sharpie. We'll talk to Sharpie in about an hour 15, and he knows a little more about Yale. But I know Pulitz is a Texas kid that's just filthy. I mean, he's typically your dude that's at Texas, or he's a Texas kid that goes to A&M, or he's a Texas kid that goes to LSU. No, he's a Texas kid that went to Yale and can just deal, and he's wicked smart.
Yeah, totally. And we all know that now. But I'm just saying, you know, as it's not like anybody knew. You don't know, right? He's a pitcher for Yale. Who's following Yale baseball outside of George W. Bush, right? Like, we have no idea. So that's a great equalizer. You could be the crappiest team in the world, but if you got Randy Johnson or Nolan Ryan on your team, you're probably going to hold the other team to 0, 1, or 2 runs. Like, it's just going to happen.
Nebraska has zero extra base hits in postseason play. That's the stat that was blowing Twitter up last night. What do you think about Nebraska's offensive approach? This isn't calling out coaching or teaching. It's calling out the fact that when Nebraska was smoking, what did they have? They had Dan Johnson, Matt Hopper. I mean, they had guys that could hit 15, 20 bombs a year, all right?
Yeah, and the bats were different then, let's be honest.
Oh, sure. But you had
power guys.
You had your power hitters. And you're asking your offense a lot with this type of blueprint or what you have on the roster to just continue to stockpile base hits and string together base hits. You need the big hit. And to Nebraska's credit, they had enough big hits during the year against the Big Ten foes, okay? And then they got enough pitching. But when push comes to shove, they're in desperate need And Schreiber and Miller have had power before in their careers, but Nebraska overall is in need of just some gangster bats. I mean, guys that can just go yard or get the extra base hit, coupled with some of the athleticism they had. So then you have the speed and athleticism on top of the power. That's ideal. And I'm wondering if Nebraska is going to double or triple down in the future to try and get that. I think they've worked with what they could get from an offensive philosophy standpoint, but now maybe the urgency is going to step up, because this just got to wear Coach Erstad out and the team out, frankly, where you get guys on base, but I mean, you got to keep getting guys in through singles, and you pray for a double. You pray for something to go out of the yard. You know, that's so tough.
Look, I think it goes to recruiting and talent in some ways too. Look, somebody like Alex Gordon or whatever, you're not all over him about, you know, you're not overly prescribing how he goes to the plate. You know what I'm saying? You're not going there and saying, okay, we're going to sit on fastballs. We're going to work the pitch. You know what I mean? You're just, let that guy go hit.
And he's got power because he's great, and it'll work out.
Just let him go hit. I feel like Nebraska is in the situation of a lot of teams where when you don't have those just purely gifted hitters, you have to prescribe things a little more. You have to have more of an overall offensive approach. And I get every baseball team's going to have an approach. But at the end of the day, it always comes down to a mano-a-mano thing in baseball, right? It's like you're a stud pitcher against this hitter. So you can, I guess what I'm saying, it feels like Nebraska is relegated to prescribing and nickeling and diming.
Perfect. Yes.
And that puts more pressure on each at bat, on each batter,
and you're pitching,
let's just call it what it is. I mean, just listen to how impressive or unimpressive this is. Just without, I don't expect you to have memorized Nebraska's stats this year, but let's just get a picture of sort of what they're dealing with. Who led them in average, and what was that average?
Schreiber, and it was 346.
No, he's at 329 now.
Okay.
Okay, who led them in home runs?
Schreiber.
Yep, six.
Six, and then Ben Miller was second with four, right?
Yeah, so, and we're talking about...
That's 10 total freaking home runs.
We're talking about 57 games, all right? We're talking about 57 games. Your leader has six home runs. Your top batting average on the team is 329. You only have four guys on the team at 300 or above, yeah. And this is college baseball. If this is the major leagues, cool, right? Like, you're in good shape. You got four 300 hitters. You're doing good. But in college? I mean, dude, there are teams in college where, you know, nobody's dipping below 290. Nebraska's got regs in the lineup that are below 290. It's, you know what I mean? I don't feel like they have enough just purely gifted hitters. You know what I'm saying? Like, guys that could just stroke it. You compare that to Nebraska teams of the past, the ones that were really successful. You mentioned like a Matt Hopper, a Ken Harvey, a Dan Johnson, Alex Gordon. You had some guys that could just rip the ball. And that's just what, you know, that's who's that guy that jumps out to you now that you can say that about? There's, you know, Schreiber.
I think you have really talented hitters on this roster, but I don't think you have go-to power. That's not their definition.
Really talented hitters?
I think Schreiber.
Difference maker?
Well,
maker guys that can stroke it?
Yeah, Schreiber's a first-team Big Ten guy, and yeah. That's yeah, no, so there's there. One. There's one.
Yeah. And then, look, you throw Jake Myers in there just because of his overall, as an overall baseball talent, he's up there in the elite stats. I don't feel like you have enough of those guys. No, I don't think you have enough. It's sort of like you almost compare them to like Iowa football at the skill positions. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? Like, those guys are good. They can run some routes. They're pretty good. They're better than you and me.
They're just unknown, is what you're saying.
They're unknown. They're not. Those aren't super gifted receivers.
I got to ask you about this. We got Spencer Long coming up in the rewind with Jake Myers. I mean, the guy has done it all. He's been leadoff. He stole bases.
Incredible. He's a pure talent.
He's a pure talent. And he got kind of slapped around by Yale, and he's battled back. But his last few,
he gave up a couple dink singles.
Sure, his last,
and then a guy got loose. You know, that wasn't a terrible performance.
No, it wasn't a terrible performance at all. But his last few outings have not been ultra dominant, and I'm just wondering how right he is. And I know
you're talking about.
And I know he's been dinged.
How rare is it, too? And we could talk about it as a positive or a negative, but at this stage in the season, it makes you wonder a little bit. Between Alvarado and Myers, like, I know you're going to have two-way guys. That happens in college baseball, which is one of the quirks that makes it a little cooler than the major leagues. It's you get that rare two-way guy. He's a position player, and he's also a pitcher, and he's in your lineup. Alvarado's case, he's the closer. Myers, your top starter. But these guys are also regulars. That's two guys. It's pretty rare. That's two guys that are regular in the field starters. And they're also counted on as your top pitchers, basically. Right? Alvarado's supposed to shut the door. Myers is your automatic W on Fridays. And those guys are also in the lineup all the time. We're 58 games in. Fatigue could be a factor. You just mentioned, is he right? I don't know. I mean, you know, Myers has, God, you know, he's up there in at-bats. He's led the team in stolen bases. He's started 52 games in the field. Plus, he's been your top pitcher. You're asking a lot of a couple guys. And I think that speaks to like what I'm saying about overall talent.
Yep, they just got to get more. They just got to get more fellas, and that's not to discredit the group that's got a conference championship now. Yeah. But the temperature is one of frustration, not just from Erstad, not just from the team, but you know the Nebraska baseball fan base wants it so bad to get another run. And you just got to kind of keep, for lack of a better term, grinding as a program to get more and more talent that takes some pressure off of your guys, be it offense.
So that's what I'm saying. You get a Jake Myers on your team, and dude, he's really good. He's one of those cross. What's the word for it? He could play it on any of these older great Nebraska teams. And it's almost like pick your spot. You're going to have him in the lineup.
He can play any generation or any era.
Absolutely. But you're seeing what they have to do with him.
Mm-hmm. They're asking a ton of it.
Extract every ounce that he can give. They have to extract all of it from him. Whereas you put him on, say, one of those teams with Hopper, Comine, who at right? Like you go
I'm
back.
I'm thinking
then.
Will Bolt. I'm thinking Simikaitis. Yeah.
At that point, do you allow him to focus more? Yeah. You know, do you allow him at that point to be? You know, like you know what?
He's one of the guys versus the guy carrying it.
Yeah, he'll be on our staff, and he's a regular mid relief guy, or he's our Sunday starter, or something like that. And then you know what? We'll probably get him. He'll be a pinch guy in the field. You know, utility guy that we'll bring in. But here it's like, no, he's starting every single game in the field and batting. And he's also going to be our number one pitcher. I just think I'm glad that they're doing that with him this year because they have to. They have to. But it would be nice if they did not have to. Right?
No, it is what it is.
Which tells you they need some boppers, man. They need some guys that are better, pure hitters.
Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, and TJ Henning, Hail Varsity Radio. Weekend edition, there's our full recap Nebraska baseball and the disappointment. We'll see if Nebraska stays alive against Holy Cross today at 3.
Well, and what does it matter? Can we be honest? So say they beat Holy Cross. Where do you think they're going to get through 49 or now 54 Oregon State?
They are not. But the point, is to get the opportunity to do it. You go 0-2, and people are going to continue to be frustrated. I mean, you can't go out like this. You've had too good a year to go out like 0-2.
Dude, Oregon State's 50-4.
We talked to Coach Casey this week. He's like, well, they just came back and they were ticked off about not getting to the tournament last year. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's one thing to be ticked off you got passed over a year ago. It's another thing to be 50-4. So yeah, you know, we got some pretty good pitching that's developed. I mean, yeah, you did.
You know what makes this all more painful too? Look at what Iowa did. You see what Iowa did last night?
No.
Goes down to Houston.
As a 4 seed and took out Houston.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, we're gonna save that.
Got him 6-3, I believe, was the final.
That's crazy. We'll hear from Gary Sharp coming up. We'll also dive in here this hour. The last of the stronghold, that being Bill Snyder relenting with this transfer era. And I thought G-Paw was dug in with his heels and there's no way this kid was going to get released. Corey Sutton, the wideout, that has all been changed. I'm interested in how and who convinced Snyder to do that. We'll dive into that. And Spencer Long, our Rewind coming up, reminding you about Sauter Heyman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds, and they are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean? Well, they're still beautiful. They're still sustainable. And they're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. Come see why pure grown diamonds are some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln or out west in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Great to have you on Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN 1480, ESPN 1480 app. A quick timeout and our chat with Spencer Long next.
To rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of...
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk Team Jack Foundation, the inaugural golf scramble coming up June 24th, Quarry Oaks, 9 a.m., and a guy that is pretty good with the clubs and better on the offensive line, proud to be part of Team Jack, is Spencer Long with us. Spencer, it is great to catch up with you again. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And let's talk a little bit about Team Jack, your relationship with the Hoffmans, and why Team Jack is so important and so special to you.
Well, it really kind of started with our class and Rex Burkhead back in college when, you know, the Team Jack Foundation, you know, really came into effect. And we started, you know, he started, you know, just mainly with Rex, but it really, you know, translated into our entire class. And it really hit home with us because it's something I've been, you know, dealing with since I was, you know, young in college. And we got to meet a lot of, you know, great young individuals, young families going through some hard times. And it really, you know, we developed relationships with these people. And the foundation does such great work. And how could you not, you know, feel connected and you know, empowered by that? And it's something I feel is, you know, very important to prioritize, and something I feel is close to home.
It is, and you mentioned your class, yourself and Jeremiah Searles and Kenny Bell and Amir and Will Compton. I mean, all of you guys and Rex, you donate time, but you do it because you care, you know?
And at the Team Jack Gala, it was almost like a class reunion. It was really cool to see.
Well, and that's fantastic that you guys keep in touch and have a common goal and desire to help Team Jack. And Spencer, what's it mean to you? I mean, you grew up in this state. You're a kid from Elkhorn. You know what Nebraska football's about. You were tremendous at it when you played at Nebraska, but you know the impact of being a Nebraska football player has for fans, but also for kids battling adversity.
Yeah, like you said, I was born in Omaha, moved out to Elkhorn when I was six, but we've been going to games since I was a kid, and it was a family event for us. We'd go to my aunt and uncles that lived down in Lincoln, and we'd spend the day there, and then go to the game and come back and hang out. And Nebraska football has always been close to my heart, and it was super special for me to be able to play there. And you know, coming out of high school, you know, let alone an offer from Nebraska—not an offer, but you know, a preferred walk-on offer—and you know, and also coming from, you know, the team that I grew up loving. So that was pretty special to be able to get the chance to play there, and I wouldn't take it away for the world. So it was awesome.
What was your mindset, your attitude? The preferred walk-on is a badge of honor. Scholarship is what everyone wants. But how did you use that as motivation, or did you, or how did you deal with, you know, your start to the Nebraska experience coming out of high school?
You know, when I came out of high school, I was, you know, under recruited and a little bit underdeveloped, and you know, I always joke, but it's true, my brother probably got me to UNL because they really wanted him as a preferred walk-on tight end, and I made sure we were a package deal. But you know, walking on, really had a chip on my shoulder, really wanted to prove myself, and really just wanted to see if I could compete with, you know, some top football athletes across the country. So as soon as I figured out I could compete, just took it in stride, and now I'm out in Washington. So it's been a wild ride, but it's crazy where life can take you.
How did that conversation go as a package deal? Who did you speak with, and who were you in contact with?
Well, I remember we first talked to Barney Cotton. He came to our school in Elkhorn and took us both, and, you know, for recruiting, you know, kind of sat us down and talked to us. And, you know, we also had some D1AA, D2 offers, you know, for actual scholarship money. But, you know, my brother and I and dad had talked, and really we know it was a commitment at any stage. And we were just like, you know, first of all, it's our only D1 offer. Second of all, it's from Nebraska. And, you know, third of all, if you're going to do this thing and put in, you know, a bunch of, because you only do things one way, you got to, you know, work your best and put in all your effort if you want to have success. And if you're going to do that, why not shoot for the stars? So I would have rather, you know, spent, you know, have not being paid a scholarship and really tried to achieve at the highest level. And along with that, the med school program in Nebraska is good. So those are kind of the two decisions that made us pull the trigger.
Spencer Long, a few minutes with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Spencer, a part of the inaugural golf scramble for Team Jack Foundation. Can log on teamjackfoundation.org, get a foursome signed up, sponsorship opportunities, money to fund research for pediatric brain cancer, and help save lives, help improve lives with Team Jack and the Team Jack Foundation. Spencer, when you got to Nebraska, who were you able to compete against that made you better, and who did you learn from on the offensive line?
Well, I started out, I was recruited as a defensive end. I was 250. I was undersized, underdeveloped, and I started out on the scout team D-line. And John Garrison, at the time, was our GA running the scout team D-line. And I got to give a lot of credit to him for his recognition in me that I could be a good offensive lineman. So they bumped me into defensive tackle, and they're like, well, you better put on some weight so you don't get tossed, you know, by Keith Williams and Ricky Henry and all those guys, and Mike Caputo and, you know, all those guys, and Hickman. So, I mean, I had to put on weight fast. And so 20 pounds, not the best weight, but I put on 20 pounds probably a month, and I was still moving at a good speed. And John Garrison, you know, pulled me aside after the season. He's like, I think I see some potential in you as an offensive lineman. Would you like to make the switch? And I said, well, coach, whatever's going to get me closer to the field. And then sure enough, next spring ball, I was playing guard, and the rest is history. So I got to owe a lot of credit to him. And I just continue to put on strength from, you know, body by James Dobson. So, you know, continue to put weight on and develop in the position. And now I'm here. So
you are, and you're in Washington, and All-American your senior year, really talented offensive line group. You yourself, of course, with Searles and Qualley, I mean, all guys in the league. You've started for the majority of your career, and you started the guard, but you've also been at center the last season. How's that transition been? I mean, you make it look easy. Washington's one of the top offensive lines in the NFL, and you're the guy making the calls, making the right reads, and protecting Kirk.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. The first first time I moved over, and that first couple of weeks of transition wasn't pretty. And there were some serious growing pains going on there, but I just, you know, I had to keep at it. And I really have found, you know, after all this time, I think I've found my home. I know there's something that matches my skill set, especially at this level, to the, you know, the best. So my mental game and physical game match up at center, and I finally feel like I've got a home. But, you know, going in, getting that first start at center, I would be lying if I told you my nerves weren't high. But, you know, the snap brings in a whole nother asset or a whole nother component to blocking. You have to, you know, snap first. And but really, it's just repetition and sticking to it and believing in yourself. So, and it turned out well. So,
yeah,
I feel more comfortable now than I ever have in my whole career at center. So hopefully we can put another season together.
That's I mean, it looks that way, but your skill set, you make it look easy, but your skill set being the mobility and the intelligence and the physicality, but also just from a technique standpoint, give kind of the football nerds a little look-see here. Just the different techniques you got to use, and then some of the similar techniques you use from guard at center. I mean, how do you combine the spots, I guess, and then factor in that snap?
So pass protection at a guard, from a guard standpoint, is very difficult, especially in the NFL, going against, you know, some of the best three techniques in the world. That really helped me become a strong pass protector at center. But, you know, getting the snap down and you know, doing run blocking and wide reaching and stuff like that is a whole other component that I had to learn. It's almost brand new. And to me, playing on all three interior spots, the hardest block in football is, you know, a snap hand reach, man reach on the wide zone play. And that's something I'm still working on to this day. But, you know, it was, like I said, there's some growing pains, and I'm still learning, and I'm getting better by the day, so I'm excited to see what the future can hold.
A name familiar to Nebraska fans, and you watched his teams before you got to Nebraska, Bill Callahan. He's the offensive line coach, and he's pretty much gold in the NFL as the best offensive line coach, or right up there. You look at Dallas, I know they're a division rival, but that was kind of his architecture with their offensive line. Now he's with Washington. He's been with Coach Gruden. What's it been like to work with him? And tell us a little insight here on the type of teaching he provides. I mean, his rep is well known. What makes it so?
I've learned so much in the last 2 years under Coach Callahan, and you know, we call him the mad scientist. He's got so many tools for you, you know, to put in your toolbox that you can use, and he's really adaptive to each player and their strengths. And you know, I've learned so much about, you know, pass protection and run protection, you know, or I mean run blocking, you know, from him. And really, it's just the guy has a pure passion for offensive line play. And he brings that care and that passion into the O-line room, and it translates to his guys. And we love him. We're a loyal bunch, and we work well together. And it's really just, you know, putting in that extra work and you know, taking his teaching and translating it onto the field. And you know, he's constantly working. He's dedicated and motivated. And any coach that, you know, is in here like that, trying to make you a better player, you know, you have a real respect for. So that's where we're at, and you know, we trust him, and it's been great.
What's the culture like? What's that locker room like in Washington? I mean, always in contention. 2015 was a playoff run for you guys. I mean, Kirk's been tremendous, and Nebraska fans remember him when he was at Michigan State. Will's a Nebraska player. Compton on the defensive side, you have Niles there. Roy was there for a little bit, so you had some familiarity there. But how's it been in your transition from college to the NFL, just from a life standpoint, not just on the football field?
Yeah, I mean, the transition, it's always rough your rookie year. It's just like, that's just the way it is, and it's a rite of passage. But, you know, in the last, you know, few years, our locker room has gone more and more tight-knit, and our coaching staff and everybody is, you know, we're a family out here, so it's a great atmosphere to work in, and it couldn't be better. And I just, you know, it makes work fun. So, and we come together and play better as a unit when we trust each other, and that's the kind of culture that's going on right now, and we're just going to keep rising and keep going forward.
Got to ask you about Nebraska 2017. You keep your eyes and ears with some guys back in Lincoln, I assume. Any thoughts, any impressions of Nebraska from what you're hearing? Got a new quarterback, got a 3-4 defensive scheme. Thoughts on this upcoming season?
Yeah, I mean, this last senior class that left last year was the last, you know, two group of guys that I really knew personally. But, you know, there's a lot of excitement around the building right now, and I can see it. And the culture, you know, is now, you know, rooted into that system now. And I'm really excited to see what they can do with it. And, you know, it's just I gotta be able to see those guys. And so we'll see. You know, it's exciting to be able to, you know, get ready to watch a new group and see what they can do.
Spencer Long with us, Hale Varsity Radio, Team Jack Foundation. Spencer, part of it, the inaugural golf scramble, Quarry Oaks, June 24th, 9 a.m. tee time. Log on, get your team in, or get signed up. TeamJackFoundation.org. Funding for research for pediatric brain cancer. Funding for research, funding for support to families, and trying to comfort those fighting this battle. Spencer, you're not a stranger to Quarry Oaks. I have about 2 minutes here. A good Spencer Long golf shot story at Quarry Oaks. Can you share one?
Well, I remember we took old Searles out there. Me and Matt Floss, we trained together. We used to train together in the off season until he moved out to, you know, California for the Chargers. But you know, me and Floss have been golfing for a little while, and Jay was relatively new at the time, so we just had a little coaching sesh out there, and it was a lot of fun. And Jay's got some natural ability, man. He'll sneak up on you, but you know, it's just a lot of fun to be able to go to a super nice course that is Quarry, and it's public, but it's beautiful, and I have a lot of fun golfing out there, and it's halfway between Lincoln and Omaha, so it's a great location and one of my favorite places to play in Nebraska.
It's kind of your home course, isn't it?
I mean, I wouldn't call it my home course. Probably Indian Creek, because it's 2 minutes away from my parents' house, so probably played there the majority of, you know, growing up. And it's really, really convenient, but I really do love Quarry Oaks. I've been there a lot.
Well, we'll see you there on the 24th of June for the Team Jack Foundation inaugural golf scramble. Spencer Long helping Team Jack Foundation, doing great work with Washington. Spencer, love to see you again, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
Yep, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Back with you on a Saturday at Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, HaleVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Spencer Long, 4.0 GPA.
Hey, good on you getting that interview, by the way.
He's awesome, man.
You just rarely hear from him.
No,
he's probably the most prominent former Husker that you hear from the least. Yeah. You know what I mean? In terms of prominence versus how much you actually hear from the guy, that scale is just way out of whack.
No, Spencer Long's a good dude, and happy
good
that he's doing well.
Too.
Yeah, he's doing phenomenal. And think about the shift he made from guard to center, and to be a center for Bill Callahan means you are incredible at what you do. We aren't going to have a ton of time, but I want to get into this with Vogues and Sharpie next hour. Kranak and Bill Snyder's getting blasted here, and he's been getting blasted the last few days, and it's still kind of close to home just because of the history you have with Big 8, Big 12, and in Kansas State. And Corey Sutton, tremendously talented wide out that you think of that go to K-State. The kick returner, kind of Lockett-type body size that can flip a game, right? You flip on Big 12 football and what's happening. A K-State team's coming out of nowhere and putting up 40 on Oklahoma. Or, you know what I'm saying? K-State builds up, and they should be pretty good again this year. Back in 11, they had a chance to compete for the national championship. So I 1,000% respect Bill Snyder, what he's done and what he came back to save post Ron Prince. And now he's getting painted as Corey Sutton's Twitter account called him slave master. Can you stop being a slave master?
Yeah.
And this is, man, I'm all about the student athlete experience, and I understand that these kids put in time, effort, raise money, are valuable. They are under appreciated in their own minds, I think. And I get that. The other part of this, though, too, is you got a real problem in the world of athletics and in just the world in general, with some kids being told no. Okay, this kid wanted the transfer. He was told, no, I'm not going to release you. And the whole point of this, in my opinion, is Bill Snyder's like, look, if you don't want to be here, fine. I'm not going to release you. You are free to leave, but you're going to pay your own way for a semester to transfer. I.e., if you wherever you transfer into, it's on you. It's your dime. If we're so awful and horrible, fine, get out of here. But it's on you. If you really, truly think we're that bad, you pay for it. You go take care of it. You take some of that responsibility. Because we invested in you, and it got into a peeing match, and you have a new athletic director in Gene Taylor from North Dakota State, I think. Yeah. And he's been on the job since May 1st. Well, right now, he's already kind of marked his territory coming in. And it was his statement yesterday allowing the release for Corey Sutton, pretty much stepping over Bill Snyder's authority.
Well,
and,
yeah.
And that's what's supposed to happen. But moving forward, that'll be an interesting political situation in that Kansas State athletic department between AD and legendary head coach. To the Sutton situation, the kid was a true freshman last year that started, didn't catch a lot of footballs. And then after spring was a kid that was going to be number two on the depth chart behind a transfer in from Cal. He wants to be closer to his sister. She's younger. And if he's there as kind of a father-type figure and needs to be closer to Charlotte, North Carolina, I get all that. But I don't – what's the main reason? And we just don't know. We aren't talking to Corey Sutton. But I just think that Bill Snyder is like Bo Ryan. They are perceived as – unsensitive dinosaurs, and I think the long-term reason isn't to get this kid to stay here to catch 1,000 yards worth of passes. It's, man, you're gonna have to like make stands in your life and commit to something. I think that's the life lesson I think Bill Snyder's trying to make and give by being so rigid.
Yeah, maybe so, but come on, anybody else can freely go from college to college.
Mm-hmm.
Just stop, right? You're not, he can't do that. And he also can't talk about how the kid failed two drug tests in public.
Well, Snyder's, getting called out is perceived to be racist by the kid. That was his little get back, possibly. Hour two on the way.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hour two, great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. We've got a unfortunate streak that has started. This is 2 weeks in a row. We do not have TJ Henning muffins.
Well, he's been watching his carbs.
Yeah, because he's 26 and...
Yeah, he needs to start doing that.
Yeah. Why not?
You want to guess something? Guess what Nebraska's record... Take the three major men's sports.
Really? We're going here?
Look at the last 3 years.
Okay.
What do you think Nebraska's record is versus Iowa? I'll just tell you this, too. This will help you a little bit. They have played 15 athletic contests against Iowa in the last 3 years. Football, baseball, basketball. There have been 15 athletic contests.
I'm going to say,
what do you suppose Nebraska's record is against Iowa?
3-12.
Oh, you saw my tweet.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I just guessed. It's probably all
3-12.
Probably two in baseball and one in basketball.
No, what? Well, no, because 2014 is Nebraska's last win in football.
Thank you.
So Nebraska has one win in each sport in the last 3 years against the Hawks.
Hmm. Vogue, sir, are you going to throw up in your mouth after hearing that?
It is a little bit shocking. I don't know exactly. I was going to say maybe 4-11. so, yeah. It feels about like what I remember, I guess. So the shock value isn't quite as high.
Brandon, two of those wins, by the way, for Nebraska in both football and basketball were in overtime.
Yeah, no, the overtime affair
baseball,
was phenomenal
win,
today.
It took a two-out bottom of the eighth rally to save the series on Sunday in baseball this year. So Iowa completely owns Nebraska. Pretty much ever since Ikor said I could look at where Iowa's at.
Hmm.
That's good. Good morning.
We're going to move on from that. Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine, at Brandon L. Vogel. No, I mean, there are some successful programs out there, and in Cranach, you just kind of have a blueprint. Iowa's done well. Nebraska's trying to get back there. And Vogel's a lot to talk about today, and you've done a great job with hot reads throughout the week, and we love kind of focusing in on that. But I want to start with baseball just because you had an excitement level on Monday. You had an opportunity for Nebraska baseball to compete against the best, and that's Oregon State. Well, now you got to go through the loser's bracket, and it's win or go home. And Yale, to their credit, was locked in and very, very good, and maybe not as appreciated as much as they should have been. With Erstad and his comments yesterday, I mean, his frustration evident. Do you think he takes this offseason to look at just offensive philosophy, or does he just kind of just keep his nose to the grindstone, for lack of a better term? How do you think he'll react to this year once it comes to a close?
Well, it's an interesting issue, I think, because when I look at Nebraska, their margin for error, just by the way they play, I think is pretty small currently. And you see, and I think this is one of the strongest parts about it, is how much the team reflects Erstad's approach, you know, the at-bat by at-bat approach, pitch by pitch. And that's good. You know they're getting a high level of instruction. But it's just not a dynamic offensive team at the moment and hasn't been. I was shocked at how much yesterday's game felt like the two games that I covered in the Clemson Regional last year, where Nebraska had, I think, one extra base hit. And if you give up one or two runs early, it just feels like you're never in it if you can't put guys in scoring position. So you could either go out and try and recruit some more offensive talent, I guess, you know, just try to become a bigger offensive team. That would be really a flip from, I think, how Nebraska has approached the game to this point. So then the other option is, well, if you're going to play that way, and if you feel like that's kind of your chance to be the most consistent, which I think it probably is, you really better have an ace pitching staff. And Nebraska's had good pitching staff, but I don't know if they've quite been to that level.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. There's a tendency in college baseball, it seems like, to sort of micromanage the offensive game to make up for the lack of just pure like hitting talent. And I sort of liken it to having a bunch of, regardless of what I said about Iowa earlier, it's like a lot of college offenses, Nebraska's included, in baseball, are sort of like Iowa skill position players, right? Like, they're not much of a threat collectively, but they're okay as long as you give them a really prescriptive way of going about playing the sport.
Yeah, and then I think that's a really good analogy. So the difference is, so how does Iowa continue to be as consistent and do what it does in football? Well, it plays really sound defense. It doesn't give up big plays. In pitching, you know, your fielding percentage is going to be high no matter who you are, unless you're just absolutely horrible. So much of that defense then does come down to, well, how well can you pitch? Can you make the pitches you need to when you have to make them? And that's something that I think largely does come down to talent. There's coaching involved there too. But at some point, you know, you saw it with Yale. You saw it a little bit in the Big Ten tournament against Maryland. You know, guy fell behind in counts a lot. but he ended up striking out the first seven batters. So when you can make that one pitch when it's 3-2 or 2-2, it helps a lot in terms of the overall team's ability and chances to win.
There's just not enough guys in the lineup to get it done offensively and string together consecutive hits if you're not going for extra base hits, station to station, and there's just not enough to do that multiple innings a game. there just isn't when it comes to this team this year. God bless them. But when it came to facing better pitching, they didn't have an answer offensively.
Yeah, you know, to take it back to football for a second again, it's like the team that you just know is going to need 10 plays to put together a touchdown drive. And it's just hard to put together 10 plays anytime you need to score. That's why explosive plays matter so much in football.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogel, let's stay there with football for a second. In your hot reads yesterday, wanted to spend a little bit of time about that hybrid defender. ESPN.com did a great write-up, kind of focusing on Alabama, Micah Fitzpatrick. He is that body type that can play nickel, can play corner, can do safety, and it's really a problem. It's a counter for the defense towards an offense when they have that monster slot receiver or the tempo-type zone read game. Defenses are trying to catch up and swing the pendulum back. And Nebraska was on the forefront of this with Pelini. When you look at some of the hybrid guys with Hag and Gomes, and even in the past, I'm going to go back to Coach McBride with a Farley, with a Jamel Williams, with a Mike Brown. I mean, so Nebraska's been doing this for decades, and they're trying to get it again. With Nebraska's roster right now, incoming, and some of the guys on the roster now, like Lamar, like Kalu, do you think Nebraska is in a good spot to be flexible? Flexible against run-heavy teams in the West? Flexible against teams that are going to try and out-athlete you in that slot spot?
Yeah, I think so. They're certainly getting those sort of body types in. And you look at a guy like Joshua Kalu making the move to safety. He obviously has a diverse talent set. And the sort of size, you know, it may not be the prototypical size you look for those hybrid guys, but the sort of size that says he can do it. And now every cornerback and safety you see them offer seems to be about 6'3", 185, mm-hmm. or 195. So they're definitely demonstrating a preference there. You know, I thought Pat Fitzgerald's comments in that story were really interesting. He effectively said, yeah, hybrid guys are great. You want to have a couple of them. Then he also came back and said, but we play in the Big Ten West, man. Which was his direct quote, which I thought was pretty funny. And it was interesting to see him highlight the difference there. And he specifically mentioned the Big 12. He's like, you know, if you're over there, you probably want as many of those guys as you can find. Here, you got to win your division before you can do anything else. And that's going to mean stopping the run. And you know, and when you look back on Nebraska's transition to the Big Ten, they were running that sort of stuff. They had great success in 2009 and 2010 with hybrid defenders. Get to the Big Ten, and you know, the evidence sort of suggests a little bit that maybe you don't want quite as many of those guys. So it's an interesting balancing act. And you know, so then you fast forward that to, say, you get to a point where you could win the West consistently. Well, then you have to start thinking about, well, what are we going to do when we have to compete against the teams that we really want to compete, when we have to win the conference championship game, and hopefully something beyond that. So it's kind of a tough style-based approach to defense here.
How do you think Bob Diaco's defense is sort of fall in line with what Pat Fitzgerald is saying you need to do, which is you need to stop the run, maybe more so than in any other conference? In the Big Ten, you have to stop the run. How does that contrast with what Bob Diaco's defenses are all about?
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see, because I think this is a situation where him playing at Iowa is an advantage. Like, I feel like he comes in and will come in with a pretty good idea of those specific traits. If you just go back and look at his numbers as a DC at Notre Dame and then the head coach at UConn, the teams were traditionally a little bit better against the pass than they were against the run. Now, they weren't bad against the run. They were just bad, or not, they were just a little bit worse relative to the pass. So looking at it coming in, I'd say this team probably be better against the pass. But knowing that he is probably aware of what specifically tends to win in the Big Ten, and just hearing him talk about defense and pursuit, filling gaps, gang tackling, all that sort of stuff, I think he'll be able to handle that part of it just fine. But where he has been is traditionally a little better against the pass.
Here's what I'll say, too, with his background at Notre Dame. I mean, think of Notre Dame's schedule, okay?
Yep.
They would play Michigan State or Michigan, and that's pro style. They'll see Florida State or Clemson in the ACC, which is pro style or spread. They'll see SC. I mean, their schedule, they'll see Stanford. Okay, so, I mean, so he is, year in and year out, during the kind of rebirth of Notre Dame, he had to go get dudes that could flip and shift on a dime week to week because they didn't have a conference. I think that's a huge advantage, right, folks.
Oh, yeah, I do, and I think that's a very underrated point. And don't forget that you also had the option in there every year with
Navy. The service academies. I mean, Air Force and Navy are rolling in.
Yep. So, you know, in that degree, Notre Dame is probably one of the more challenging jobs defensively for that very reason. Nobody plays a schedule that wide-ranging, and you're just not going to see that many different styles of offense consistently year after year. So in that line of thinking, you know, being in the Big Ten West and being in the Big Ten specifically, where the offense is still, although it's, you know, kind of modernizing and changing a little bit, is still pretty identifiable right off the bat for most teams, probably feels like a little bit of an advantage to Diaco.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, I know you guys are headlong into putting together the yearbook. I'm curious, you follow a lot of the statistical models more than most. What would you say is the consensus when you follow the statistical models that you value the most, I guess? The ones that predict wins. What would you say is like the consensus of how many wins all those models are projecting Nebraska to have this year?
It's probably between 6 and 7. We've seen some of the high profile ones in terms of FPI, S&P Plus come out and be closer to the 6 end of that narrow range. In terms of when you start factoring where Nebraska would be picked, I think it'll bump up a little bit from there, but that seems to be the consensus between 6 and 7 wins. So 6.5.
And just again, from somebody that follows it so much, should that be concerning? Are these fairly accurate statistical models overall? Would Nebraska, I guess, have to be an outlier to go above that total?
A little bit, but here the thing I think that's different about Nebraska this year is I think that their potential ceiling, which isn't being measured by any of these, is higher than most of those teams in the same range. Now, that might be a little bit of, just bias on my part because I'm the most deeply embedded with Nebraska and I may not know as much as those others. But when you look at, I think defense can be a big part of a turnaround right away. I think quarterback can be close to that. You factor in those two things, I think Nebraska's potential is pretty high on that front. So those are the sorts of things that get left off a little bit with some of these statistical models, because to do it and to do it fairly, you're trying to normalize everything. You're constantly looking at, okay, what things matter? Is it returning starters? Does it matter where those returning starters are at? All of those sorts of things, past performance, how do you weight it? That all has to be the same for everyone so you have a meaningful ranking system. Nebraska's then case becomes, in all individual teams' cases becomes, how do you sort of step beyond that base level? And I think Nebraska's chances of stepping beyond that are actually pretty good based on those two factors.
Yeah, no pressure on
on Tanner Lee. it's really what you're relying on. Like, you're relying on Tanner Lee to basically rise above, you know, the, I guess it's you can't call it law, but it's sort of an against all odds kind of season.
Well, a little bit. I don't know if
Kranak, you're just bleak today, brother.
No, it's true. I mean, think about it. Like, look, Vegas is coming out with Nebraska at 6 wins.
7.5
most
now.
Most of the statistical models are saying Nebraska's got 6 or 7 wins. Think about how well that would go over if that's true. And these models, historically, fairly accurate. So in some ways, it is sort of an against all odds kind of season.
Listen, a six, seven win season would cause some freak out, but I think folks could understand it if they're competitive and lose. And I'm not lowering the bar either. I'm saying they could see as to why it went this way. If they get boat raced every game and they don't look like they know what they're doing and they're not physical, that's when folks are going to freak out. I think the projections, be it Vegas or ESPN, they don't know what to think. I mean, you get a certain amount of points for returning quarterback. You get a certain amount of points for returning starters on both sides of the ball, offensive line, defensive line. All of those things are part of these configurations when they project the win total.
Go ahead and argue math, Chris.
Well, no,
You're arguing math.
They don't know what box to check for Nebraska because there's of the unknown. I mean, you don't have proof, right, Vogel? I mean, that's half of the reason these things are so low on top of the schedule.
Well, and even more than returning talent, which does factor in. They probably last year's stats factor in a lot here. And Nebraska wasn't really that impressive in many regards,
offensively,
or defensively. You know, here's the point I want to make about Lee, though. Like, I don't think the bar for this season to be a success for him is very high. Go back and look at the quarterback stats at Wisconsin for the last 2 years. Now, in 2015, Wisconsin was not a good rushing team. Last year, they were a little bit better. But look at those quarterback stats and say, can Tanner Lee do that? Because I think if he can, given the similarities between Crist and Riley and their shared history, at least on the offensive side, that's where Nebraska wants to be. That's what that offense should look like. And those stats, I don't know exactly what they are offhand, but they probably won't blow you away. Now, then the question becomes, how do you get to, 10 wins and the Big Ten championship game? Well, can Bob Diaco do defensively what the past two defensive coordinators at Wisconsin have done? That's probably a bigger hurdle for year one, but I think that's why you brought him in. Mm-hmm. I think Wisconsin is very much the model here for Nebraska football under Riley.
And that Wisconsin model is the old Nebraska model. So it'll all be okay. Brandon Vogel with this, HaleVarsity.com and magazine, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, yay or nay to the rumor that you are on the cover of the 2017 Hale Varsity yearbook with iBlack?
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny. we should be releasing that cover next week. The yearbook will be heading to the press shortly thereafter. So you're just going to have to wait for a couple extra days. Or if you want to pay for that information, we can negotiate something offline.
Okay, there we have it. Vogues, you're awesome. It was fun to chat today. Thanks for everything, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you, bud. There he is. Kranak, I just think that the point Vogues just made is super important. You're chasing Wisconsin. How can you be more like Wisconsin from a performance standpoint and efficiency standpoint at quarterback? And then specifically defense. I mean, defense has kept them in and won so many games, not just in the West, but they've competed well with the East. And I'm thinking back to last season. Now, I know they got boat raced, just trounced by Ohio State a couple, 3 years ago. But Wisconsin's been pretty good, and they've won with defense and then kind of tried not to screw it up, but have been able to have a skill guy at running back two of the last 3 years to help carry him. So I don't mind that game plan at all.
No. I think we've all looked at Wisconsin the past 2 years, be like, yeah, that's how you're supposed to play ball. You're supposed to have really good defense. You're supposed to be able to run it really well, and you're supposed to be sound. that's, I mean, just period. That's how you play the sport. And that's the best way to play the sport in the Midwest when you're landlocked and you probably can't compete and just out-talent everybody all the time.
No, just be tougher. That's what it is.
Yeah, Nebraska's got some work to do there. And it's, I just think it's sobering that all those models are saying Nebraska's basically getting 6 or 7 wins.
Well, we'll spend
and if you fast forward to post Thanksgiving, is that going to be okay? No.
Well, depends on how
that won't go well.
It depends on how. I mean, if it's 40-10, no, yeah, folks will be screaming.
I'm just saying, dude. If it's the Tax Slayer Bowl,
no, you're not going to be happy. But how did you get to Tax Slayer? I mean, there's context involved. We'll get caught up with the Iron Horse. Gary Sharp with some Husker baseball, some Nebraska football. Get a sense on Bill Snyder. That is next. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. Going to bring us 2 absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7 1/2 minutes after that, you're going to bring us 2 more. Then 2 more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is the Iron Horse time. Gary Sharp with us, Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. Sharpie, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys.
All right, we got to dive into baseball first. And what were you expecting yesterday? I think Yale's a talented team. I know you spoke with their head coach this week, and they were going to be something to deal with going in. And coach,
bunch of idiots.
Coach Hurstad was just that the term furious on his face was evident in the post game yesterday when it came to getting out competed. He's just at a loss for that. Nebraska, I think, had maybe a focus issue he was worried about this week. But are you surprised by the outcome with yesterday?
Well, I'm really surprised that you're this far of the year, and this is your journey, and this is your goal, is to make the NCAA tournament, that your focus is not dialed in. Yesterday was a bad loss. Everybody can say that Yale is a good team, and John Stuper's done a nice job with this team, but that RPI is a little bit inflated, and you're the Big Ten regular season champions, and Nebraska's approach yesterday at the plate was mind-boggling. A lot of just beating the ball into the ground, just not good at bats, And I don't want to go over the top and just crush Nebraska baseball, because at the end of the day, the team that you saw yesterday against a very good pitcher, in this time of the year, everybody has a good one. Mm-hmm. It's the teams that make it to Omaha that have the good 2 and good 3. The team we saw yesterday for Nebraska at the plate against good pitching is really the team we've seen all year long. That when they've struggled against a 1, that's what they look like. I go back to the Iowa game last week in Bloomington. So that can happen, and that's been there all season long. It's the other little intangibles that Darren alludes to after the game that make you shudder a little bit, that their focus wasn't great and they got out-competed. That's not supposed to happen this time of the year, and he'll have to regroup. And today, guys, for Nebraska baseball and Nebraska athletics, it's a must-win against Holy Cross. You can't go for another year in the NCAA tournament 2 in the queue, and you can't have that shine of 2 weeks ago when we were talking about, man, if they can win today against Penn State, they're the regular season champions. If by chance you're not able to pick up a victory today, the shine really is almost completely off what you did 2 weeks ago. And that would be unfortunate for this group of guys. So they have to bring it back in and get focused on Holy Cross. And now you're in scramble mode if you still have the ultimate goal, which you do, of winning that regional.
Gary, you were around Husker baseball during the formative glory years. You've been around the College World Series year after year recently. Nebraska's approach offensively, for the most part, and it might be just out of necessity, has been sort of prescriptive approaches at the plate, sort of to compensate for lack of just pure hitting talent in some ways. When you see the best, and that's not how it was with Nebraska during their glory years,
when you're up close with the teams that make it to the College World Series, do you see a lot of that at that level? Or I guess where would you say it swings the most? Are teams primarily comprised of players that can just flat out rip? Or are they comprised of teams that are sort of micromanaged and need to have that like team approach to manufacture runs?
It's, you know what, I would say on the latter end, teams that have won the College World Series in the last 10 years, there are very few of those teams that are the station to station. They rely on good defense and good on the mound. But most teams that come to Omaha and win the College World Series are guys that can hit to the gaps. A lot of doubles types hitters. Guys that are elevating the baseball, guys that are hitting line drives, not guys against good pitching that are completely just pounding the ball into the ground where you have 20-plus ground outs. You know, I know you guys talk about this, I talk about this, we all talk about the great days of Nebraska baseball. It is what it is for Darren and his program because they have a beautiful stadium, they have the attention because of what happened in the past, but the chess pieces have changed on how baseball is in the Big Ten and where Nebraska is compared to when they were in the Big 12 and the areas they were able to recruit and some of the other things that came along with being in the Big 12, what you could do with your roster. But with all that said, it's just the simple things of baseball, competing, focus, good at-bats, and Nebraska didn't have it yesterday. And also, to be honest, they didn't have the good Jake Myers. And when Jake struggled, that immediately put your offense in, we might have to put up a big, big number today against a very good pitcher. And I think it was a trickle-down yesterday. I have no doubts that they'll come out and they'll be very good against Holy Cross today. But you've put yourself in a very deep hole with not very much pitching available to try and scramble and get back. I said before it began, if they're playing on Sunday, I consider that an accomplishment. You know, and that would mean they'd win today, and then they'd have to win three more to get out of this regional. But first and foremost, they got to win today, because if they don't win today, guys, have fun on those talk shows on Monday morning.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some frustrated Nebraska fans. Sharpie, I want to talk big picture with baseball for two more seconds, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
And that is approach here. We talk a ton about identity and offensive style in football. But what's realistic for Nebraska moving forward? Can they tweak and go try and build lineups with more power, with a combination of speed and athleticism, but also a couple of power guys? Can they, maybe they're trying to do that. You'd know better than me, but is that something they can look at doing so there's not such a reliance on, okay, we need great pitching, and then we need to be able to string four hits together to get a couple of runs if we're not getting the extra base hits? I mean, offensive construction wise, where can they go? What do they need to do?
Yeah, I think everybody would love to have the Matt Hoppers and the Dan Johnsons and guys that are 15 to 20 home run guys. Probably at Nebraska, that's not going to happen, but I think it's pretty simple to get guys that, you know, and you can teach a lot of this. You find guys that are gap hitters. They're going to drive the ball into the gaps. They're going to get out and run a little bit. You know, you're always going to have your punch and Judy hitters, but you want guys that hit to the gap. But I think this is the construction of this team is kind of how Darren likes it. A lot of grinders, guys that have specific duties in that lineup, whether they're, you know, station to station, small ball batters, or they're guys that they think can hit the ball out of the ballpark with one swing. I think this is how Darren likes his team. It's just they had a bad approach yesterday at the plate. And it kind of now is in a three-game approach at the plate where you got frustrated against Iowa because you left a lot on base and all you hit were singles, and then you struck out against Maryland. Again, against good pitching, Nebraska has really struggled all year. They found a way to win some of those games. Now, when there are bad pitchers and guys make mistakes, Nebraska puts up big numbers. They are a great mistake-hitting team. So you hope the guy on the mound today for Holy Cross is throwing mistakes. But I think the roster that's currently how it's constructed in Lincoln right now, I think is how Darren would like to have that kind of a roster moving forward.
Yeah, and then if Nebraska knocks off Holy Cross, obviously they're going to beat Oregon State. What the? Oregon State is 50-4?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
That is, I mean,
think about like all-time records. That, I mean, that has to be what, top three or four ever.
It's working on it.
They're in the neighborhood of one of the great Texas teams that had I think a 50-5 start. I could be wrong on that.
A&M in 89 was something like 53-3 or something too. Yep.
It's they rolled through the Pac-12. Unbelievable. They set the all-time wins record, the winning streak that they had. They also were coming off last year. They got snubbed. They thought they should have been in the NCAA tournament, even if they were the last team in. You know, they didn't get in, and they kind of used that as a motivator. And Pat Casey, we all know that. He's a fantastic head coach who has built that program. I mean, they should not – Corvallis, Oregon is not a place where you go, hey, they're a national championship baseball program. But he has built that, and he has built this team with some great pitching. They're great on the front end. They are great out of the bullpen. And then they just score enough runs. You know, they're not going to beat you down and put up 10 and 12 a night. On the board, they're gonna beat you by winning a lot of 3-1 type ball games, and they're real. The number one national seed hasn't won a national championship in college baseball since '99, and we're seeing more and more parity. Well, Miami might have to slide away because I think Oregon State, this team is built to win a national championship with the dimensions when you get to Omaha and have to play in TD Ameritrade.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, want to get your thoughts here on Bill Snyder and the saga down in Manhattan. And just kind of get your reaction to the new athletic director coming in. He started May 1st. He's already kind of made his first major decision publicly and overruling. I mean, that's my read on it anyway, is overruling what Coach Snyder wanted in the barring of a transfer. So do you think they can coexist moving forward?
Well, first of all, I don't understand colleges. They never win when they try and block a transfer. You're never going to win that PR battle, even if there are hints of another school
yep.
Contacting that student athlete. You're never going to win when you try and block a transfer. In this case, Kansas State's not going to win this, but Gene Taylor, the new athletic director you alluded to, Schmitty, is going to win a lot of people's votes because he handled it the right way. This was a one-day story that became a two-day story. And he said, we're not letting it become a three-day story. That's the rules of PR. And he stepped in, and they did the right thing, and they moved on. And, you know, he had to make his first big decision because we know Bill Snyder not only has and Bill Snyder deserves all the accolades for what he's done with K-State football. This is also someone that's got a statue outside of the stadium, and, heck, the place is named after him. So he carries a big weight. And for Gene Taylor to sit down and go, let's have some reasonable discussion here. Cooler heads prevail. Let's do the right thing so that we don't crush our own selves. Let's release Corey Sutton. Let's let him go where he wants. Let's apologize for releasing some personal information that you shouldn't have. And let's just move on as quickly as possible. And that's a sign of an athletic director who could have been intimidated, said, nope, we're not doing this. And he can look good helping Corey Sutton, and he can look good pulling Bill Snyder out of the fire, because, boy, how many times have we seen coaches with long tenures that are getting towards the end of their career, they do something really stupid at the end that will mar their career. And I'm telling you, if they would have not resolved this yesterday, this is something that Bill Snyder, this would have hung with him probably until he's ready to hang up the whistle.
That's too bad with all he's done. And just kind of reading some of Snyder's comments this week, I think – yeah, he made the mistake with the personal information, but I don't think he's wrong, not necessarily in blocking the kid. I mean,
Come on. What are you talking about? What if that's your boy? He's at a school, he wants to leave.
Suck it up and earn the number one spot.
The kid said he was told that he would be a starter if he left school early. He was not a starter, but he played in 10 games.
Right.
I think Bill Snyder is, guys, definitely old school, oldest head coach in FBS football right now. He is from the era where the coach had the power.
Yep.
Now we've seen it, whether recruiting or on your campus, the players have the power. And I think there are certain cases where Bill Snyder, that's been a struggle for him. Because we could say, okay, hey, stick it out. You're a number two, but you know what? Stick it out, and you can be a starter. Well, that's not the case. We've seen that. That's the new generation we're in. When somebody doesn't get what they want, they move on to the next thing. And in this case, you know, Bill Snyder and Kansas State did the right thing because they stopped it immediately, and now everybody can move on. But boy, it was so uncharacteristic for Bill Snyder to come out and drop the drug test. I think that's got to be a violation somewhere of revealing personal information.
Totally, and I bet you that was sort of Taylor's trump card to be able to get Snyder to relent. You know, if he hadn't said something as soon as he said that, you lost the war.
It's over. Snyder felt like he was BS'd on why the kid really wanted to leave. Okay. So that's why he pulled I'm blocking every port of exit or entry. Okay.
Well, good for him.
In that sense, I agree with Snyder. And he didn't go into further detail. The drug, the personal information, no, I don't agree with. But, if he's getting lied to as to why a kid wants to leave, and he's calling the kid out on it, I have no problem with that.
Who cares about that part, though? If you're Snyder, you want that kid on your campus?
No, absolutely
and around
not.
Your players?
Absolutely not. But
all
you
the time?
But
with
you
that
brought
sort
him.
Of,
but
I guess
you, but you're the one who
attitude?
Brought him here, though. You're the one who brought him in. You had to have a dynamic playmaker. I mean, that it's a two-way street.
But if that guy doesn't want to be there and he's calling you a slave master,
well,
you just want him hanging around your campus?
No.
Like, no.
But it comes down to pride, and it comes down to saving face, too, with Snyder. I mean, it was ego.
Well, we also did find out that you fail a drug test at K-State in the past, you were gone under Bill Snyder.
Yes.
Now, if you do, you get another opportunity.
Yeah. Damn liberals.
Welcome to college football. Sharpie, you have a good rest of your day, man. It was fun catching up. Thanks for a few minutes.
Hey. Thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is.
It's those damn liberals and their ivory towers.
The why is important to me. Yeah. Why you're doing something.
Look, if I'm a coach in this modern age and a player who now has a major microphone, they have social media accounts, if they want to transfer, I have a discussion with them. I try to talk them out of it. If their mind's made up, though, see ya.
Okay. How would you react, though, to, you want to transfer, go home, think about it. You still want to transfer. Listen, I'm not going to let you do that. I don't think it's in your best interest. I don't think you're being straight with me. And then the response is, well, you're a slave master. How would you react?
See ya. Get the hell off my campus. Mm-hmm. Get away from my team. Get away from my players.
Okay. That's fine. By the way, you're gone. I'm not releasing you. If you want to go, fine. You're paying your own way. I mean, it was a game of chicken. That's what would have happened had the AD not stepped in. Okay,
you just release the guy. Look, and Gary brought up a good point, man. The players have more power, right or wrong, because the way the system has been set up has been somewhat the players have been exploited to a degree.
No, I don't disagree with that at all, but
so
I still think
there's
still an adult, though, right? There's still a coach that should have power and control, but don't abuse that.
Okay? How did Kansas State and Bill Snyder benefit in any way from how they handled this? They did not benefit in any way.
The AD is the one who came in. The only benefit to this is K-State's new leadership looks good and in favorable view of potential future recruits.
What do you think the players are talking about?
Well, right? I don't know. I think half the players are like, get out of here. And then the other, I don't know. I think Coach Snyder's culture is pretty strong, where guys 9 times out of 10 will back him. I mean, the Sutton kid also came out and says, I don't agree with how the program's being run. Why is my body always hurt? I mean, well, it's football, dude. And Bill Snyder and Nick Saban are two of the only two guys left in college football that beat the crap out of their players Monday through Thursday, so they're physical and tough on Saturday.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. But I'm just saying,
your body's not supposed to feel good after practice or after a game. That's kind of my take on it.
No, but you just set your team back. How is this going to help you on the recruiting trail?
It's going to help Kansas State in two ways. One, they're going to be a little more specific on who they bring in. They probably won't go after a guy that's high maintenance, or maybe this high, they'll think twice again, okay? And also, kids out there are going to have to really understand now what they're getting into as long as Coach Snyder's there. He is old school. Can you play for that? Can you deal with that?
It's
a reminder for both parties.
Like, they didn't benefit at all. He handled it poorly. Sure, maybe from a, I guess, moral standpoint, trying to teach kids lessons about the importance
that's where
of
sticking to your word. Up. Yes, that's
great.
That's
but
my thing.
That's not as a division at the Division I college football level. Come on, man.
You need more Bill Snyders at the Division I level is what I'm saying.
Oh, God, Chris. We need more coal mines, too?
No. From the principal's standpoint, okay? Cranach, we're out of time. This was fun. We'll have to arm wrestle again next Saturday. All guys, right. Take care. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for your time with Hail Varsity Radio. See you.